Now, the story of an extraordinary life. Marty Murray first explored the wilds of Alaska 8 decades ago, traveling hundreds of miles by dog sled and battling mosquitoes as thick as fog. Those trips put her at the forefront of the battle to establish and then protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Now, after a century of life, age and illness have all but silenced Murray's voice. NPR's Howard Berkus has this profile of the so-called matriarch of the environmental movement.
Picture this. A log house in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, nestled in aspen and spruce beneath the rocky spire of the Grand Teton. The snow's already a foot deep, the air frosty, but inside it's warm, where a tiny woman sits, cozy in a plush-stuffed chair, her hair thick and white like a furry hat. After a century of adventure and activism, Marty Murray is no longer well enough for interviews. Her words flow instead from books, films, audio archives, and friends, including writer Terry Tempest Williams, who calls Murray
a role model that you could be a woman, that you could write, that you could be a lady, quote unquote, and still have very strong views. And I didn't see any other women with that kind of voice. And power and graciousness. Marty could be up against the most fierce politician who was anti-wilderness and really touched their hearts with her love of Alaska.
Williams recalls a congressional hearing in Denver 25 years ago. 100 million Alaskan acres were at stake. The state, native people, miners, loggers, oil companies, and preservationists each wanted a share.
The place was packed. It was at the state capitol. And I remember she stood up. And here she had white hair. It was braided like a rope on top of her head. And she said, "Gentlemen, my name is Marty Murray."
The Alaska lands debate had been bitter, the atmosphere charged, prompting pleas from the podium to put emotion aside. Williams reads what Murray said next.
"I am testifying as an emotional woman, and I would like to ask you, gentlemen, what's wrong with emotion? Beauty is a resource in and of itself. Alaska must be allowed to be Alaska. That is her greatest economy. I hope the United States of America is not so rich that she can afford to let these wildernesses pass by, or so poor she cannot afford to keep them."
Marty would say the same things exactly in favor of wilderness and protection that we would, but they would all listen to her where they wouldn't listen to us.
Brock Evans is a 35-year veteran of environmental battles. He recalls hearings where he was attacked verbally, viciously, only to then watch Murray charm the attackers into listening quietly.
She had immense credibility. She'd been there. Senator Stevens, senior senator from Alaska, one of his favorite tactics was to make the point that environmentalists hadn't been to Alaska, or if they had been to Alaska, they hadn't been to Alaska very much and not as much as he had. Marty would say, "Senator, with all respect, you know, I was traveling through Alaska in a dog sled before you were born."
When Ted Stevens was born in 1923, Murray had already lived most of her 21 years in Alaska. She had already traveled hundreds of snowy and frigid miles by dog sled and horse-drawn sleigh. But that was nothing, given what she was about to do. Murray may have danced to this Alaska waltz as a newlywed when she and her husband Olus traveled on steamships to some of the coldest and most remote parts of the territory. It was their honeymoon and also a research trip for Olus, a scientist with the U.S. Biological Survey. At the end of the steamship line, they turned to dog sleds, mushing 550 miles through the Brooks Range in winter. Marty's writing about the trip is read in a film called Arctic Dance.
"It was a quiet black and white and gray symphony, no wind, a still workaday kind of world. It was the North, as it so often is, gray, quiet, self-sufficient, and aloof. The whole environment has a steady, serene beauty that sings, that will stay forever, that soaks into one's being."
More than 50 years later, Murray spoke about the trip and an evolving sense of responsibility for Alaska in an interview for a National Park Service oral history.
"Maybe after we were married, I began to learn that all those things he was interested in might somehow in some places be threatened. Before that, I was simply conscious of the fact that I enjoyed being in the out-of-doors. Perhaps it didn't occur to me that someday somebody would have to take up the cudgels to defend these places, because in those days in Alaska, everything was just taken for granted. There was just so much wild country stretching out for hundreds of miles all around you that you didn't think about it.
Olus's next assignment would take the Muries to the ocean of tundra that would later become the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. They had an infant son then, and close to 400 miles ahead of them, up the Yukon, Porcupine, and Old Crow Rivers. This was a summer trip, with mosquitoes so thick that even the natives stayed away. Marty agonized over whether she and her baby should go.
And I remember saying to him, if I don't go with you now, I'll just become one of those biological survey wives who stay in Washington, D.C. and go to bridge parties and luncheons, and while the husband is off from whatever wild part doing research. And people have asked me, wasn't it hard to raise children in the wilderness? And my answer to that is always to think of all the things I didn't have to do, like go to bridge parties or answer the phone or wax the floor.
Marty traded that for this, dragging a motorboat upstream for 250 miles after the crankshaft broke. The Muries' companion Jess Russ called it the most miserable trip of his life. Frenzied black clouds of mosquitoes swarmed exposed flesh. Netting protected the baby day and night. In the film Arctic Dance, Marty said her son was healthy and happy on the trip while the adults struggled.
The thing that really saved us was that Jess had a fine tenor voice and I had been singing all my life, and he would be standing on the bow of the scow poling and singing, and I singing with him from inside the little tent that was for me and the baby. And that sort of saved us.
Will you love me in December as you do in May? Will you love me in the good old-fashioned way?
Marty said later that she'd lived enough for four lives, but she and Olus were just getting started. They moved to Jackson Hole, Wyoming to study elk. Wilderness was their growing family's second home. It soon became their cause. Olus helped form the Wilderness Society, becoming one of its first directors. Some of the nation's most prominent conservationists, writers, and politicians flocked to the Muri Ranch, and over afternoon tea, they lobbied and plotted the protection of wild places, Alaska most of all. This reading of Marty's writing is in the film Arctic Dance.
This is the value of this wilderness, its absolutely untouched character. Not spectacular, no unique or strange features, but just the beautiful wild country of a beautiful wild free-running river with no sign of man or his structures. For this feature alone, this Arctic is worth preserving just as it is.
That's a description of Alaska's Shinjek River country. The Muries led a small expedition there in 1956, filming the region for the effort to protect it. Marty later recalled herds of caribou moving like raging rivers.
They were traveling steadily along now, a great mass of dark brown figures, bulls, cows, calves, yearlings, every combination of coloring, all bathed in the bright golden light of this Arctic night. There, thousands of hoofs churning through the gravel and water of the creeks and the river had been the great mysterious train sound we had heard and puzzled over.
Alaska soon became a state, and in 1960, the region the Muries had explored was protected by executive order as the Arctic National Wildlife Range. Olus died 3 years later, just before Congress passed the Wilderness Act, which he and others fought hard to enact. Marty celebrated the new law, but struggled with grief. One of her three children suggested she get away from conservation work. She recalled the words of her late husband in explaining her decision to continue.
It was really better to be in the thick of the fight than standing in the corner with your face to the wall. So I'd hate to think that all I could do was moan and cry and make a fuss. You have to somehow do more than that. You have to try to influence more people.
Marty had worked mostly behind the scenes, but now at age 61, with Olus gone, Marty emerged from the shadows, writing, speaking, and lobbying. oil was discovered in Alaska, drilling rigs were now possible in places Marty considered sacred, so she returned to the state, flying over the river valleys and mountains she once explored on the ground. She helped draw boundaries for the biggest land preservation act to date, 50 million acres of national parks and wildlife refuges, writer Terry Tempest Williams.
Now, in the modern conservation movement, so much of it takes place behind desks. It's all about policy and strategies and meetings and faxes, and that direct experience isn't there in the same way that it was with the Muries. And I absolutely think that makes them unique. They did have a direct tie to a different America. And I think that our challenge in this time is to keep that direct line of inquiry and participation in wild places open and alive.
Muri commanded the attention of presidents, but pressure grows for new domestic sources of oil. Veteran environmentalist Brock Evans wishes he could turn to Muri next year when Congress again debates the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
I'd bring her back here in her wheelchair or whatever it would take, and I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think she's able to, but if she were, I'd certainly want to bring her back, and I think it would make a difference because she is who she is.
Congress will hear about a vast storehouse of energy beneath Alaska, the nation's growing dependence on imported oil, Alaska's suffering economy, and confidence the Arctic refuge can be developed without being destroyed. Muri always looked past all that, focusing instead on stormy Arctic tundra and herds of grazing caribou like those that close the film Arctic Dance.
In my mind, those Arctic valleys are wonderful places for pure, unadulterated adventure and learning. Will our society, our modern society, realize the value of keeping one such area, at least, empty of technology and full of life?
Marty Muri is living out her century of life in her log home in Wyoming, warmed by a propane stove with reddish-blue flame. The Muri Ranch now includes a conservation center dedicated to carrying on the Muri's work. And when Marty's gone, the ranch will become part of Grand Teton National Park, with more protection, perhaps, than the Arctic refuge the Muris explored and fought to preserve. Howard Berkus, NPR News.